Once upon a time, there was a boy. And this boy, he was just sitting in the corner of the playground, and he had his knees hunched up against his chest, and he had his arms wrapped around his knees, and he had his head as if he was staring down into his lap, trying to see an insect crawling around there. It seemed like that was all he was interested in, was the dark, shadowy insides of his lap, because he wasn't looking at the world, he wasn't looking at the sky or at the trees or at the other children playing in the playground all around him. Nope, all he seemed interested in was staring down at the shadows in his lap. Now, there was a teacher, and she was out on break duty. She was walking around just making sure all the kids were okay, making sure they weren't getting into any trouble, making sure they were playing nicely. But then, just as she was checking out that everyone was okay, she looked over to the corner of the playground where the boy was sitting examining his lap, with his knees all hunched up and his arms wrapped around his knees and his head bent down into the shadows. And she thought, what's going on here? She thought, he didn't look very well, he didn't look very happy, and she wondered if something was wrong, and she went all the way over to him, and she walked closer and closer and closer until she was right next to him. And she said, are you okay? And he went, go away. She said, what's wrong? He said, go away. I don't want any friends. Well, this was a strange thing to hear, and she just put her hand on his shoulder, and as soon as he felt her hand on his shoulder, he just wriggled away from it and seemed even more inside of himself and wrapped up around his own knees. And she felt really rather concerned now. She wondered if something was wrong, if he was feeling unwell or if he was feeling particularly sad that day. And without quite knowing what she was doing, she just sat down next to him. It was a little bench enough for the two of them to sit down upon. She sat down next to him and she just started telling a story. I don't know why or how it happened, because she didn't really have a story in mind. And after all, she was supposed to be on break duty. She was supposed to be wandering around the playground, making sure that everyone was okay. But there was something about how sad that boy seemed, that it seemed to just draw her down to sit next to him, as if she couldn't do anything else. And the story that came out of her mouth, why, it seemed as if he was drawing it out of her by how sad he was. And this is the story that she told. Once upon a time, there was a princess, and she was quite the most lovely princess you ever saw. She was constantly in front of the mirror, preening and pruning herself, making sure she looked perfect and beautiful and lovely. She was always putting on one lovely dress after another and sitting in front of the mirror and teasing her hair out into little strands and tying her hair back in different ways, this way and that way, until she had just the perfect look. But she would only have it for about a minute, and then she would decide that, oh, that piece of hair ought to be over there, and that earring wasn't quite long enough, and she should get another one, and, well, the dress didn't go with the scarf, and, oh, she needed to change it all, oh, it's so troublesome, and off she'd go and change everything round, and she'd work on that for ages and ages and ages, and then she'd come back, and then she'd have everything perfect for 2 minutes. And then she decided that those earrings didn't go with those shoes and the whole thing had to be changed. Until it got to be that she could hardly sit still. Even the very rare times that she found the exact perfect look, why, it would last for not 2 minutes, but 1 minute. And then not 1 minute, but 30 seconds. And then not 30 seconds, but 10, until there was never a moment when she was pleased. Never a moment she was satisfied. Never a moment she could sit and rest. And her mother and father, they were really very concerned about her. Very, very concerned. They could see that she wasn't even getting out of her bedroom. She was so obsessed with making herself look perfect. She wouldn't even go out and socialize and make friends or do anything because she was always staring in the mirror at something that wasn't quite right. And they consulted all the wise people they could think of. They asked the chamberlain what he thought, and he said, I don't understand young women. It's no idea. They asked the psychologists in the kingdom, and they said, well, it must be a case of psychoimmuno-neurotic disorder. And they didn't understand what that meant, so that didn't work out for them either, and they went searching everywhere they possibly could until they basically came to the end of anyone they could ask. And at last, they had no one left to ask at all. And they were in such despair at this point that one evening the queen, she was sitting at her dinner table and she started just crying. And the king said, why are you crying? And she said, well, it's our daughter and what are we going to do about her? And the king, he was about to try and make her feel better, but then he started crying too. The two of them were in such despair that there was nothing to do but cry. Now, there was one woman in the palace who had a heart like gold. And she was the cook. And just then when she heard them crying and she came in with more soup and she saw them both crying into their soup bowls, she just took the ladle and she filled up the soup bowls so that it was now soup and tears mixed together. And she did something that she wouldn't normally do, which was she set the soup bowl down on the table, she pulled up a chair of her own. Cooks aren't really supposed to sit at the king and queen's table, but that's exactly what she did. And she folded her arms over her big chest and she just sat there. And she said, do you know what the problem is with your daughter? The king and queen hadn't even noticed that she had pulled up a chair and sat down at their table. And at that moment, they were astonished to hear her voice. They looked up and they what? Do you know what the problem is with your daughter? If we knew the problem, said the king, we would have done something about it. Well, said the cook, I can tell you what the problem is. Or rather, I can tell her what the problem is. Best I speak to her directly. Well, the king and the queen, they looked at each other. This was most unusual. What would a cook know about these sort of things? And yet, on the other hand, no one else in the kingdom had managed to help them. Not even the wisest people they'd consulted. So who else could they turn to? The queen said, of course. The king said, oh, very well then. And so off went the cook. And she went all the way up the stairs and she went down the marble corridors and through the gold-rimmed doorframe into the princess's bedchamber. And what did she find? The princess by now had never found rest for weeks. She'd been at her bed table like a maelstrom, like a whirlwind, constantly. Oh no, that's not right. No. Pulling off her earrings and putting them back on again and taking off her dresses and putting them back on again and brushing her hair this way and that way. And she was restless. She was sleepless. She didn't sit still for a moment. And the cook, she went, hem. And the princess, she went, who's that? She turned around and she looked and she saw there at the doorway. There was the cook. And the cook, she just looked at the princess and she folded her arms over her big chest and she said, well, what have we got here then? A princess who never sits still. What? Said the princess. And if you looked at her at that moment, you would see a dreadful sight. Her hair was all sticking up in different directions. She had one earring on this ear and a different earring on that ear because she was in the middle of changing them. She was half in and out of one of her dresses and she looked frightful.
What? She said.
The cook said, when, missy, did you last sit still?
I don't know, said the princess.
When was the last time you had any rest in your bed? She looked over the bed. It was completely untouched. It looked like no one had slept in it for weeks.
Said the princess. I don't know.
When, said the cook, did you get into this foolery that you're doing now? The princess in that moment, she started a little bit of weeping just out of one corner of her eye, and she started to say, I wanted to be sure people would like me. And the cook, she came up to the princess, and with her big, big arms, she lifted her up very gently, and she put her on her lap, and she put her arms around her, and she rocked her like a baby. Like a baby, she rocked her. And the princess, she was at first a little bit, ooh, this was unusual, but then she just relaxed, and she felt just like a baby herself. And the cook, she just rocked her like a baby and said, when did you ever get the idea that no one would like you? The princess said, I was once at a ball, and I thought I heard one of the men laughing at how I looked. And the cook, she was still rocking her back and forwards and saying, oh, baby, baby, baby. And how did you feel then, baby? And the princess said, well, I felt like a hole had opened underneath my legs and I was falling down into it. I felt so awful and I swore I'd never feel that bad again. So I wanted to make sure I looked perfect, 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 and no one would ever laugh at me. And the cook, she was still rocking her, baby, 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 baby. She said, baby, there's a story I'd like to tell you. And once you've heard my story, why, you'll understand it all. And in that moment, the princess, she felt like she was a little girl, no longer a young woman, just a little girl again. Back in the time when her mother used to tell her stories when she went to bed. And it was something about the rocking backwards and forwards, something about those big, big arms wrapped around her now. She just fell into a place where everything was a story. And this is the story that she heard. Once upon a time, there was a man. And this man, he had a little cart that he would pull around town with him. He didn't have enough money to afford a pony or a horse or even a donkey. Nope, he had to pull his own cart around town. And what would he do? He would collect anything that people had finished with. If it was an old pair of shoes, he'd say, I'll have it then. And he put it on his cart, polish them up a bit, stitch up, repair them a little bit, and he'd take them round the town to see if anyone would like to buy that pair of shoes. Other times people were, well, they didn't want that old shirt anymore, and he'd take the shirt, he'd take it home, he'd stitch it up a bit, clean it up a bit, he'd, you know, mend a few buttons, and then onto his cart the shirt would go, and he'd take it around town. And it always turned out that there were some people that had something they didn't need anymore, and there were other people that were looking for just the kind of thing he had. So he was always busy. He was always busy. And he'd spend the whole day going around the town like this. However, there was one day when his cart, it was quite empty. He'd started out that day with a few things on it, but he'd already sold them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, gone. All the things he had, sold them all. Now, on a normal day, you'd sell a few, but you'd get a few too. But he wasn't getting any. No one had anything they wanted to give away that day. So there he was, walking round town with an empty cart. Now, he didn't just stop, because if you stop and go home, well, there's nothing going to happen good to you that day, so he just carried on walking. But the children of the town, they thought this really funny. They started walking after him, walking after him and saying, "Hey, what are you selling?" He didn't think that was very funny. He said, "Well, nothing. I'm not selling anything." "Nothing?" they said. "You're selling nothing? Ha! Who wants to buy nothing? Oh, I'll give you £2 for your nothing." "Go away," said the man. But the kids wouldn't go away. They thought this was a funny game. And the longer he walked with the kids behind him, the funnier they found it. Because soon there were other kids joining them. Soon there was a little gaggle of them saying, "What's going on? What's the game? What's the game?" And the kids that were already there, they said, "He's selling nothing. He's selling nothing. He wants £2 for his bags of nothing." "Bags of nothing? You buy bags of nothing? That's a silly game. Oi, how much for your bags of nothing?" "I never said anything about bags," said the man. "What are you talking about now?" But on they went. And there were now more and more kids. And they were newcomers joining and saying, "What's going on here? He wants £100 for his bags of nothing." £100? Bags of nothing? That's disgusting. "Oh, you're a crook. You can't sell bags of nothing for £100. Oh, you're a bad man, you are." And so now there were loads of kids all joining, all the kids in the town. And they were all trailing behind the man with his cart. The poor man was feeling pretty harassed by now, walking along with his empty cart and this gaggle of children all behind him going, "Bags of nothing." Well, before long, there was such a commotion, and there were so many children, that the rumours, they started spreading all around the town. The rumour was it that the man who was pulling his cart was selling bags of nothing for £1,000. Bags of nothing for £1,000. And at first, some of the adults that heard this, they were outraged. They said, "That's a swindle. He's a crook. That's not the right thing to do. You can't sell bags of nothing." But then there were other people that were, well, quite rich. And they perhaps had so much money they didn't know kind of what to spend it on that day. When they heard about the bags of nothing, this sounded intriguing. Bags of nothing for £1,000, you say? Well, you wouldn't charge £1,000 for something unless it was rather special. Oh, intriguing. And so now, as well as the gaggle of children following the man around, there was one or two rather wealthy-looking gentlemen, and the odd lady or two, just curiously watching the cart and wondering what might be on it. Until the rumours spread so far that soon the king got to hear about it. And when the rumours reached the king's ears, why, they'd grown so large that the king was sitting at his dinner table and he was eating his very well-prepared dinner, and he heard his chamberlain say, "Your Majesty, have you heard the gossip today?" "No," said the king. "What gossip's that?" "There is a man. Well, I won't say any more about him. He might be a charlatan, he might be a trickster, he might be a fool, he might be a wise man. But he is apparently going around town selling bags of nothing."
"Nothing?" said the king. "Nothing? Selling nothing?"
"Bags of it," said the chamberlain. "And he's asking £1,000,000.
"£1,000,000? Said the king. "That's an extraordinarily large sum of money for a bag of nothing. Tell him to come here."
Well, no sooner had the king spoken than the guards were dispatched into the city. And no sooner were they into the city than they had tracked the man down and hauled him into the palace compound and up to see the king. The king was just finishing off his rather delicious dessert, finishing off and licking it with his fingers, and taking the plate and polishing off the chocolate sauce with his tongue. "Ah, you," he said to the man. The man was really quite bewildered by this point. He came in and sat down in front of the king. He said, your majesty, it's all a lie. It's all rumours. It's not true. None of it."
"Oh," said the king, I was becoming rather curious in your bags of nothing.
Yes, Your Majesty, but the truth is I don't have anything. I have nothing.
Yes, nothing. I've heard you have nothing. It sounds very interesting. Nothing. Nothing. I've always thought, how could one have nothing, own nothing? Tell me more.
Well, I told you, said the man. It's not... And just then he realised that the king really believed him. He didn't really find himself saying what he meant to say, but rather, Your Majesty, it's quite special. It's quite special.
Yes, said the king, it certainly sounds like that. Tell me more.
I have perfected a certain kind of bag, a fabric, that when you make a bag out of it, it will hold all your dreams, Your Majesty.
Your dreams? I didn't hear anything about dreams.
Well, you see, dreams are nothing, Your Majesty. They are nothing until they come true. That's what's magic about these bags. If you hold your dream in the bag and you keep it safe, and then you open it at the right moment, then it all comes true.
Really? Said the king. Sounds rather special. How much were you wanting for this?
Oh, said the man. Well,
I don't normally sell them to normal people, but to you, I'd be willing to part with it for normally a million, but half a million would do. The king simply reached down into the sack of gold coins next to him, pulled out several of them, handed them to the man. Those gold coins were so precious and so valuable that just a handful of them was all that he had asked for. He took the money. He said, thank you, Your Majesty. Bags. You know I've run out of bags. I'll be back. Off he went, running hell for leather, until he came home and he found the first piece of fabric he could lay his hand on. It was an old shirt, and he ripped it up, and he stitched it up into a little bag, and he brought it in, and he gave it to the king. Well, the king, he took this bag, and he cradled it in his hands. He was so, so happy. He went upstairs, and that night he poured all of his dreams into it. All of his dreams. You see, the truth was, the king was a very lonely man. It's very lonely sometimes when you're the most powerful person around. No one is really your friend. They're all working for you. No one's really there to listen to you. They're there to hear your orders, not how you're feeling. And so, that day, the king, he just sat there and he poured into his little bag all the dreams he had that he might have some friends after all. That he might have some friends. That someone would be in his life that would care about him, that would want to listen to him, that would want to know how he was feeling, that would want to hang out with him. And he poured his dreams into that bag, and he was so, so desirous and longing that he could almost imagine by the time he was finished, that bag was filled up with dreams and the longing for friends that he'd had. Well, he put it very carefully by the side of his bed, and he went to sleep. And that night he had the most wonderful dreams. The most wonderful dreams of having all the friends you could ever want and all the most wonderful people to hang around with and just spend time with and drink and socialise with. And until by the time he woke up in the morning, he thought it was all true. But he woke up, he realised it had all been a dream and he felt terribly sad and disappointed. But then he looked at the little bag and he thought, ah, it's still there. And he didn't quite know what you were supposed to do. Do you look inside or do you wait? So he just left it and he summoned the man. The man came in looking white as a sheet, pale. He hadn't slept a wink that night. He was afraid that the king was going to find out that it was all a trick. It wasn't true. But nonetheless, he was welcomed in very kindly. The king sat him down and said,
I didn't ask you everything I need to know. Should one leave the bag for a day or more?
Said the man. Well, as long as it takes for your dreams to come true, Your Majesty.
I see, said the king. You mean I should just leave it for as long as it takes?
Yes, said the man.
When your dreams have come true, then you can open the bag. Because the dreams will have come true, and there's no need to keep them there anymore.
I see, said the king.
Well, all right then. What if I want to add some more dreams?
Oh, you can do that.
You can do that just by wishing them into the bag, but you must never open it to look.
Oh, all right, said the king. All right.
So that night the same thing happened. He lay before he went to bed, and he thought of how he wanted friends. In fact, now his dreams were a bit different. He dreamt of how he didn't just want some friends, but he wanted everyone in the palace to be his friend. Everyone, whether they were a servant, or whether they were a chamberlain, or whether they were even related to him. He wanted all of them to be his friends. And he dreamed and wished those dreams into the bag, but he didn't open it. And that night he had the most wonderful dreams of the whole palace being his friend. But when he woke up the next morning, why, he realized it was just a dream. Well, the following night, he thought, I'll really do it this time. I'll fill it even fuller. And that night, he had the most amazing wish before he went to sleep. He wished that everyone in the whole kingdom would be his friend. That he could knock on their door and say, hi, can I come in? And they'd say, oh, we've been missing you. And they'd give him food and they'd sit him down and everyone would have a good time together. That was what he wished for, that he could go anywhere and do that anywhere. Well, this was such a lovely thought that he went to sleep that night and wished the dream into the little bag by the side of his bed and dreamed dreams that you and I might only wish for. Such lovely dreams of going anywhere and meeting anyone and having friends immediately like that, that when he woke up in the morning, he couldn't bear it. He couldn't bear to realize that it wasn't true, that it was just a dream. And he started to cry and cry and moan and shout because he was so angry that it wasn't true. Well, the chamberlain came in and said, Your Majesty, what's wrong? And the king said, I want everybody to be my friend, said the king.
Oh, said the chamberlain, well, I'm sure that can be arranged.
No, said the king, I don't want to order them to be my friends. I want everyone to be my friend.
Well, said the chamberlain,
I don't know how to do that, Your Majesty. If it's not a case of ordering, then... Oh, I'll do it myself, said the king. And he pushed the chamberlain to one side and then said, oh, sorry. And out he went into the palace. And everyone that he met that day, everyone that he met, he thought of something to say to them that they might enjoy. If it was the cook, he said how much he enjoyed the soup the night before. The cook was astonished. He just stared at the king.
Your Majesty, are you feeling unwell?
Because the king never said stuff like that. No, said the king, I'm feeling very well. In fact, I love your cooking. It's marvellous. In fact, someday we could just sit together in the kitchen and chat like friends.
Well, certainly, said the cook. I'm happy to talk to anyone who loves my cooking.
Well, good, said the king. I'll see you later then. And then it would be another servant and another. And each one he'd tell them something he liked about them, something he appreciated. Until by the end of the day, it seemed like everyone was his friend. But that night, when he went to bed, he realized that his dream hadn't quite come true. And so he got up, he put on his clothes again, and he walked out into the world. And everywhere he walked, he would knock on the door, and whoever answered it, he would say, you know, I'm lost. I would like somewhere to sleep. Could you give me a bed for the night and some food?
and they would feel so touched that this poor traveller, who they didn't recognise as the king, was so lost and asking for help that they would say, "Come in, come in. We'll give you food. Sit down. Tell us about yourself." And he would do that until he'd spent the night at several different houses, and when he came to the next morning and the dawn broke, oh, he was so happy. And he went back to his little bag that was waiting by the side of his bed, and he knew that his dreams had come true, so he could open it now, and he opened it up, and what do you think happened? He looked inside. There was nothing there. Nothing at all. And he was so happy, because that meant that his dream, it must have escaped the bag and run into the world. And that was exactly what he'd experienced. Everywhere he'd gone, everyone was his friend. That day, the king, he invited the man who'd sold him the bag into his palace. And he said, "Sir, you have made my life what I always wanted it to be." The man, he was kind of astonished. He was expecting that he was going to be hauled off to the prison, he was going to be taken down to the dungeons, and he was going to be punished. He said, "Your Majesty, in fact," said the king, "I'd like to invite you for supper, and we can talk about it." And that evening the king made yet another friend, and they sat and they talked and they laughed until by the time it was time to go to bed, off to bed he went, and he was never happier than that night. The cook, she came to the end of her story. And the princess, who'd been sitting like a baby in her arms, who'd been rocked back and forth like a baby, she just stared up at the cook and she said, was that a story for me? And the cook said, "For you and everybody else in the world who doesn't have all the friends they would like." "Well, I like that story," said the princess. "I like that very, very much. Would you be my friend?" The cook said, "Of course, everybody's my friend." And they spent the evening talking and drinking and eating together until by the time they were finished, the princess, she was so happy that she'd forgotten that she had one earring in this ear and a different earring in the other, and her hair was a mess. And to be honest, she didn't care. The next morning she made her bed and she got her clothes on, just simple old things, and she brushed her hair just once or twice, and down she went. And the whole day she was making friends with this person or that. And the next ball that happened, the next big party, she really didn't care who laughed at her. If they laughed, who cared? It didn't matter. She knew that there was nothing wrong with her. And she had all the friends that she could count.
And that's how it's going to end up with the other two as well.
The teacher who'd been in the playground telling the story to the little boy, she came to the end of her story. And all the while that she'd been telling that story, the boy had lifted his head, looked around, he dropped his knees in the end. In fact, he was sitting there and just staring around him at all the people playing in the playground. The big kids and the young kids, the girls and the boys. And he had this smile on his face, a smile that suggested that he'd taken something in. The teacher said, "Do you want to go off now? Do you want to go off and play?" He said, "Yeah, thanks," he said. "Thanks a lot. That was a good story." And off he ran. And he dived into this little scrum of boys and girls playing together. He just dived in and he said, "My go!"
And he meant it so clearly that no one could disagree. And they handed him the ball, and it was his go. And I don't know what happened next. I think they must have had a good time, because I can't remember what happened next. It must have been so good that the teacher just wandered off and made sure that the other children were playing very well. That was the end of my story.